Hello and welcome to episode 1281 of The Sleeper and the Bust. It is Thursday, April 11th, dang it. And I'm your host, Paul Sporer, joined as always by Justin Mason. Justin, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. How you feeling?
Not too bad.
Better than Hunter Brown.
Yeah, better than Hunter Brown. It's really, really rough. Better than Alan Winans, although that one's a little less.
Yeah.
Surprising. Like, I did say in the SP chart, like, hey, maybe you get an easy win here. Take the shot with Winans if you're feeling froggy with it. Pick on the Mets. But I wasn't, like, hard recoing him.
The brutal part about the freaking Hunter Brown one is I didn't start Brady Singer in my main.
Oh, I get that. I get that. In fact, I accidentally messed up the SP chart and I put skills are hot through two, and then I put but I didn't put the rest. And someone said, but don't leave us hanging. What did you mean? And then somebody named Greg guessed, but the Astros are a difficult lineup. He's exactly right. That's exactly what I was going to put. And I was like, you know, you still want to be careful with them. So be careful with any Singer starts. And I think I gave him the 2X recommendation. So I put him in the 12s and the 15s, said you can definitely play him, but not must there. Now, is that the one where you have the deep pitching?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just not worried. I've got, you know, like a what did I say? Let's see. I have
like 244 or something.
249 ERA and a 0.94 whip right now. Like, it's just
utter bananas.
Like, it's, yeah, my pitching is amazing. My offense is kind of mediocre. I have like no strikeouts though, because I did start a bunch of relievers early on, but I've got a nice base for my ratios right now, which I love.
Yeah, that's always fantastic, because you know there's going to be some regression, but then when you get that first, you know, kind of kick in the teeth, it's not killing you.
Yeah,
the way it can feel like sometimes. So that's never a problem to be building that ratio upside for when you finally get yours, because it comes for everybody, and it might not be in the form of a Hunter Brown. It might just be, you know, kind of getting beaten up a couple times a little bit more lightly. But if it is a Hunter Brown beating, well, that's tough to take. And you know what? Shouts to another person in my comments yesterday. Glenn the Don indeed, kissed the ring because he was on it, or they were on it. I don't know if it's a man or woman, but I said, no, I know it's only 7 innings and 2 games started and he's being BABIP to hell, but 8 Ks, 6 walks ain't pretty for Hunter Brown. No concern against KC tomorrow, looking like hot shit, winning 6 in a row. And they were dead on, and shouts to him. Brown's one of my guys. So I said, you know, one nightmare inning sank him at Texas. I'm going to stick with him. I recognize the quality of KC. And I want to throw in something that we have taken for granted. Both of us have said this in passing at times. KC is not a pitcher's park. It is a home run suppressing park. That's it. It is fourth in park factors over the last 3 years overall, if you're using the composite number. And this surprised me, but I said it in passing on my box score show this morning, and a KC fan was like, hey, you know, just want to let you know that that's not really how it is. And I was like, really? So I went and looked. They're third, excuse me, 2022 through 2024, third behind Coors and Fenway in overall park factor at 105. Now, it is 87 for homers. So it is, and that's what leads us to that. I know I can say that for me. I assume that's what leads you there too, to say that. But there are triples Haven, 151, so 51% more than league average. Doubles, pretty strong, 10% better at 110. Singles, 108, and you add all that up and it's enough to push them above the pack. So now you throw in this great offense, which you keyed in on early. We're talking fall, when you were first saying, hey, don't look at this KC team as something to always jump at. Now you throw in the knowledge, and some of y'all might have already had this knowledge, and shouts to you if you did, but I think it is conventional wisdom to think of KC as a pitcher's park because of the home run suppression, but it is not. And then you throw in a quality offense, you got to be really careful against this ball club. Now, even if I'd have known the park factor, I was still going to start Hunter Brown here. It's a guy I believe in. I wanted to trust. But now this is another dud, Justin. Where are we with Hunter Brown right now? Now, well, you and I both know that he starts in Atlanta next. Easy sit.
Yeah, you're not.
Or home to Atlanta. Doesn't matter where he faces Atlanta. Gets Atlanta next for Hunter Brown. First off, let me just ask you, are you cutting him anywhere?
Maybe in some 10s and 12s, I think I might. I mean, he looks lost. Like, this was not sometimes you just don't have it today. Like, this is, like, he...
I
mean,
that's how I felt about the Texas one.
Yeah, he definitely didn't have it today. But, like, there's some real command issues. And we knew that kind of coming in. And now, you know, teams are just saying, listen, we're not going to chase outside of the zone on you. We're just going to wait for you to throw something over the plate because we know you can't locate it inside the zone. My big concern is, like, I know there's been a lot of talk about, like, oh, you know, once Verlander comes back, once the Astros get healthy, are they going to send down JP France? You know, before it was going to be Ronald Blanco, but dude throws nothing but no hitters. You can't send him down.
Exactly.
Could they send down Hunter Brown? I mean, I don't know that they would necessarily, but.
Well, I mean, if he's as lost as we're thinking. And right now, it certainly looks like a Tyrone Taylor with a grand slam off Luis Guillorme, by the way, here as the Mets just unload. I mean, he was beaten around the yard. Five of the hits were at 100+. Four were at 105.4 or better. Two piss missiles by Bobby Witt Jr., Michael Garcia, and Vinny Pasquantino got him as well. So those were four just scalded hits. A bunch of them in the red. There was only one single that was like modestly hit, the other one for Vinny P at 81.2 miles an hour, but it was still an 880 expected batting average. So it wasn't hit super hard, but it was in a spot where it was going to be a hit. So he was just beating around the yard. Like you said, he's looked terrible. The core skills are not there. One of the things that I keep talking about, you know, I've been starting to put like little bits of commentary at the top of the SP chart, just, you know, things that are kind of on my mind. And basically the first 2 days that I've done this have basically been ways of telling people not to panic, just in a little bit of a different form. But yesterday's was about Luis Castillo and George Kirby and how they're not really that far, if at all, in the case of Castillo, from their strikeout minus walk ratio that you would expect. Kirby's a little bit off, but his control is still there at 3%, which is excellent. Castillo's literally 1 point off, 19 minus strikeout minus walk versus 20. They elicit no concern for me. But now Brown, when you throw in this, I've got some concern. I think there's a world in a 10-teamer where I could get behind it.
Yeah.
I think he's got to be like my only obvious cut. Everyone else, I got to have a real reason because there's probably still somebody worse on the team that you can stick around with him for a bit, but you're not using him next week no matter. And then what was the start after that that you mapped out
at
for
the
Hunter
Cubs.
Brown? Oh, yeah, at the Cubs,
I'm
which...
I'm not using him there either, so...
I would
unless he goes out and shoves... If he goes out and shoves and, like looks great against Atlanta, then, yeah, obviously. But, like,
if he looks mediocre, for me,
I don't think I'm starting him at Chicago.
I'm a little lighter on it, where if he goes five innings and looks like himself, you know, 5 to 7 strikeouts, a walk or two or whatever for Hunter Brown, okay. But is he even going to do that? And so you're at least not using him for a week, maybe two. If things really go well, maybe you get him back. But I don't know. I think in a 10, you can move on from Hunter Brown. He looks miserable right now. And this all comes after me preaching patience. The extenuating circumstances are grave underperformance that has, you know, skills issues behind it, injury, or huge playing time change, which again, his could be a playing time change situation for when Verlander comes back, like you're saying. Well,
and here's the thing. The third start after that is in Colorado.
Oh my goodness.
Like,
yeah, that kind of furthers my resolve. I really think that there's some reason to do that.
Like the next start you can conceivably use him for is home versus the Mariners. And that's not an easy matchup either. Like it's not one I'm running away from, but like, I have no problem if you want to drop Hunter Brown. You're not going to be able to use him for a month.
Yeah, I think there is some absolute merit to that because he looks right now. So anyway, just kind of wanted to talk about that since that's, you know, ongoing right now. Well, he's out of the game, obviously, but that was a pretty quick exit there. Jackson Holliday called up. They could have made it look a little less obvious, but okay. Okay. I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, you know, saying, hey, they do have gobs of talent. He is 20. He struck out a ton in spring. Not that I didn't think he could make the team, but like you could, there was a more reasonable case. I didn't think it was as egregious as say like Chris Bryant, you know, the one that ended up getting a grievance filed, which he lost, unfortunately, which I don't even know how, but whatever. So Jackson Holliday is up, second baseman. Obviously not really available anywhere, so we don't have any concrete direction there. What do you expect out of Jackson Holliday, though? Like, what do you really think he can do? He's basically going to get a full season, so what kind of projection did you put down for Jackson Holliday, and what do you think he's going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jackson Holliday is the best prospect in baseball. Like, I don't disagree with anybody who especially if you take away Jackson Churio and Lankford, who both made the team out of camp. I think he was the clear number one guy still left in the minors. That being said, like, I don't know if Jackson Holliday is completely
fantasy.
I think he's going to be very good. I think at some point he is going to be Corey Seager-esque. Right? Like, okay. A guy who doesn't have a ton of speed. He may run a little bit early in his career, but can hit for a really good batting average, can hit for a lot of power. Hopefully he just stays healthier than Seager, you know, did earlier on in his career. But like, in order for him to be a really, really good fantasy, you know, guy, he needs to be able to unlock both that batting average and power early on. It's a tough park to hit for power in. Batting average now is what we're talking about.
I know. I'm just saying it still feels weird. I know I keep pointing that out, but it's just I can't get my mind.
It's going to be 10 years down the road, and we're still going to be like, you remember when Camden was the hitter's haven?
Yes, we will be the boomers being like, I remember then. That was crazy.
So like, I'm not like going crazy right now. Like, honestly, if I was in a redraft league, obviously not in a keeper dynasty, where these places, real places where I have the Holliday, I'd be looking to trade Holliday. I'd absolutely try to trade.
Sure. Him, try to sell high on the crazy hype.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, like, a successful season for him may be like a 12, 10, 270. And like, there's nothing wrong with
it's
that.
Fine.
It's a, you know, very decent rookie campaign, but like, I don't see like him. I don't think he's going to be like a 30-10 guy or anything like that this year. I don't think he's going to hit 300. So for me,
that's like, his avenue, though, is the batting average, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that's for his chance for Jackson Holliday to really soar, is if that batting average comes through in a big way, that's how it's going to get done. And I'm with you, though.
The batting average does come through, like, what, he's like a 315 guy, like, that's fine, but that's not like what people expect or are hoping for right now. Right, they're hoping for like 25 homers and a 300 batting average. Well,
okay,
and
but I just think that at some point you have to punish people for their bad expectations. Then,
yeah,
like, why would you expect that?
Because people are crazy when it comes to prospects.
Yeah, so no, I get your general point about selling high, but like 312 with 15 steals would be amazing. If he can hit 300, that's game changing.
I don't know if he's even going to come close to 15 steals. Like, I know he stole what, 21 last year, but he did 17 of those in high A. Like, the second half of the season when he was in double A and triple A, he stole 4.
Okay. Well, he'll have time to get used to big league pitchers.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he does steal more than I'm expecting, but like, he's not a burner. So
no,
like,
but you don't have to be. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions, is that you have to be a burner to steal. You absolutely do not. So, I mean, like, if he is Yoshida, 289, 15, and 8.
I think it's perfect. Like, I think that is probably.
That's really good still.
It's really good for a rookie, but I think you can get more than that.
You can probably get more than that. I think that that's definitely true.
He was already being drafted ahead of Yoshida in a lot of leagues.
For sure. He also plays shortstop, which is different too. So keep that in mind. But Yoshida was the 85th ranked hitter last year on our auction calculator, and it's 750. Let me get you the full count. 85 plus. Oh, 85 and 58. So yeah, about 144th overall player there for Yoshida. So you can beat the 144th best player in a trade for Holiday.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now you might just want to keep him, and it'd be fun to have him. And maybe he does more. But if you're really just trying to maximize in a redraft league, I agree with Justin. I would be dangling him out there because I think you can get a top 100 player pretty easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's move on to our main topic today. We're going to talk about, you know, it's really difficult this time of year to talk about much with any conviction. And it probably does get annoying to hear us just keep saying, be patient, be patient, be patient, even though that is the best advice. Like, I stand firm that is far and away the best advice that we can actually give. Not everything's actionable. Not going to tell you to run out and get every single player or cut a bunch of guys. But we are starting to reach some stabilization points that actually have some merit. Now, a stabilization point doesn't mean that this guy is this from here forward and he cannot be challenged on that. It just means that there is some credence to that sample that you can now put it into the cake, so to speak. You can take that ingredient and bring it into the mix. And the strikeout rate stabilization point is 70 batters faced, which, by the way, not all these guys have even reached. So I want to be clear on that, but a handful of them have. And so we're starting to get into that area. And I figured that'd be a fun topic, is to get into some big movers and shakers there, and risers and fallers, and kind of figure out where we're at. Are we panicked on some of the guys that have fallen? Are we buying into some of the guys that have had a surge? Now, unfortunately, we have to start with a sad one, because I don't really care if you're buying into his surge, because it won't matter. The biggest jump from last year is Shane Bieber. 24 points.
I would say that I'm going to take the under on Gat K percentage rest of the way.
I mean, I'm going to, you know what? It's kind of like betting the double zero. I'm going to bet even. I bet he sticks right at 44% the rest of the way.
Yeah.
I feel confident in that. I will bet every nickel I have that when we look at the end of the year.
If it was 50%, like, I would feel better about that, just because then he could just like go face two batters real quick, strike one out, and then not strike one out.
Oh, but you 44% think he's coming back this year?
Oh, no, I'm just making a joke.
Oh, okay.
44% is a harder number.
It's a weirder number to actually get. But yeah, I'm just saying, obviously, Bieber out for the year, so that sucks. I probably would have been speaking well of this, saying that I do buy into him regaining some of his strikeouts. Not that he would keep 44%, but that he was going to be better than the 20% that he was last year. But that's not going to happen. Let's talk about Tanner Houck, up 16 points to 38%. On his strikeout rate. Tanner Houck has looked good. Now, he's taken advantage of a friendly schedule. Make no mistake about that. But hey, you play who's in front of you, and the stats all count the same in fantasy. So, you know, I never like to get too crazy on that, because, like, all right, well, they don't count less. Now, it does matter of, like, okay, projecting forward, are they going to keep such a high rate? So he's at 21% last year. I'm less concerned if you think 38% is going to hold for Tanner Houck, because of course you don't.
I do not.
Do you think he can substantially beat the 21% from last year and make a real impact this year, Tanner Houck? What do you think about that?
I think that's a really good question. Like, I don't think substantially, if that's the word we want to use, is
I think 25% would be what I would consider substantial in this case. It's like a 3 to 4 point jump over a full season to me would be impactful. So you think it might be more of 21 to 23?
Yeah, okay. 22-23%. Like, his swing strike rate is 11.5%.
He's actually down.
He's not getting like a bunch of extra swings outside of the zone. He's not even coming into the zone all that much. His zone rate is 43%. So I feel like this has a lot to do with the early season schedule. And
he got Oakland and who else?
The Angels.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I knew it was easy. I had just forgotten. You know, he's got a big called strike rate surge to 23%, up from 16. And when you consider that the swinging strike rate is actually down a little bit, marginally, not enough to care, but that's probably where the extra strikeouts are coming from then.
That's exactly where they're coming from. And I'm actually going to go look, and I kind of add a plot real quick and see. I wonder if he's just I would have to go back and like rewatch the starts to like be 100% sure, but I wonder if he just got a lot of calls.
Well, like, he's got a 4% walk rate too, so he's like dotting.
Yeah.
Hauk seems to be just dotting up a couple garbage teams and the umpire just ringing him up.
Yeah, and that's what it looks like. You go over to like his plots over on Savant, and he just was killing the corners in the bottom of the zone.
Okay.
In both those starts. So for me, I think maybe he was just getting some friendly calls. I think
sure.
Combination of a couple bad teams. Does that mean he can't be better? No, like we've always known Tanner Houck to have good stuff. I think
absolutely.
The question was always going to be like, hey, can he command and control it regularly? And will he stick in the rotation? He's going to stick in the rotation, at least for right now. I mean, the Red Sox, kind of need him now that they've lost both Giolito and Pivetta. So can he, continue with this kind of pinpoint command that he has shown early on? I don't believe that quite as much. So
that's more believable to me than the strikeout surge, though, for Houck.
Well, I think the pinpoint command is one of the reasons why he is getting those strikeouts, right? Like, because
true,
like he's getting those because it's not a matter of like, hey, he's getting swings and misses. He's dotting things on the edges and getting calls.
What I mean on that, because you're right, because I'm different ways of saying the same thing. I could see him holding some of the walk gains for Houck, 9% sure. down to 4%, but not necessarily keeping the called strikes up so much that he's getting the Ks from it.
Yeah. I could see that too. I think there are going to be more walk issues. I mean, again, like he's just never been a guy who can really fill up the zone very much.
I might be okay with that though. Cause if that brings his nastiness back and he gets more of the punchies, maybe that is like get the punchies in a better consistent way, which is via the swinging strike than the called strike. Either way, I think I like Tanner Houck. And right now, I talk about the team streamer thing, which again is not a new concept. It's just a different way to term it, which is a guy that you're not cutting after you start them. You're still spot starting them and you're just keeping them on the roster. And I've got kind of another level to that, like a premium team streamer, which is they only sit against the best of the best. I think that's where I'm at with Houck right now. Unless he's facing one of the top dogs, the Dodgers in an interleague game, maybe going into Yankee Stadium, Atlanta, which is another interleague situation, although they play a lot Boston and Atlanta because of like the history of the franchises or whatever. Maybe Houston, like they're not guaranteed, but whatever your top five, whatever type teams are, that's all I'm sitting Houck for. Are you at that level with him?
I don't think I'm at that level with him, but his upcoming schedule is very nice. I mean, he gets,
for sure.
Gets the Angels tomorrow, and then he gets, it looks like
Cleveland,
the Cleveland Guardians, at home, but still. Or yeah, it's at home. Yeah,
they're sweet swinging right now, but I'm not running away.
About them at all. So
not for somebody like Houck, who I do think has some legitimate upside. So yeah, he's pretty close to that premium type guy for me, premium type streamer, where I'm really only sitting him in the toughest battles at this juncture.
And then
you mentioned
following that he would have a two start versus the Giants and the Twins. So like,
and it's
it's such a nice early season schedule like that. Yeah, I think you are just rolling with him right now. And then once they start coming in division, you're going to have to make decisions. But by then we'll have more data.
Baltimore, by the way, another team there. If I didn't name one, I probably just forgot him when I was saying the premium teams. But, it's just a handful of teams. I talked about this with regards to Severino, who the pitching charts yesterday said he was going to go today instead of Quintana. Even though I figured they would just move Quintana, I went with what the sheets were saying. So I was talking about Severino in the latest pitcher chart, but he'll go tomorrow. And he's somebody that no shot I would start against Atlanta in Atlanta, but pretty much every other, outside of the top tier teams, Sevy also starts for me. Houck, by the way, still just 65% on Fantasy Pros, which is ESPN and Yahoo, which means he's under rostered. Yeah. It was in the 40s. So those leagues have gotten tighter, but I think he needs to be about an 80% clip. He should be on a roster. He really should be on a roster right now. What about Brady Singer, your boy? We just talked about him a little bit incidentally there, talking about that Houston KC game, plus 10 points to 29%, a guy you've liked in the past. You were not as aggressive on him this year. A, did you end up with him anywhere? B, are you buying into the strikeout game? Because the core skills are there.
I did end up with him in a few leagues just because he was going so cheaply. He did have a good spring, but more importantly, he had a really nice two, or what seemed like was going to be a really nice two start to start off the season. And so it didn't end up working out. Well, I mean, it worked out because he just pitched well, but didn't work, the two-step didn't work out because he got moved up when Michael Walker got hit with that comebacker.
Yeah, but he still got to face Oakland in L.A. the same. Oh, no, that's Hauk. Sorry.
Chicago or Minnesota, and then I can't remember, Chicago.
You were right. Yeah. So White Sox, Minnesota, and hey, Minnesota, they're not a bad team, but I don't run from them, and he cooked them. So what do we think here with your boy Singer? Are you back in? And you know, I know you didn't want to start this Houston outing, which I don't blame anybody.
I wish I had.
He did well. 5 innings, 1 run on 5 hits, 2 walks, and 4 Ks. So the Ks came back down a bit, only 5 swinging strikes. Honestly, just surviving against Houston's good enough for me. I don't need the Ks to be popping off against them. That's a good outing. So where's your confidence level on A, the strikeouts holding? Because again, they're not, it's not 10 points higher anymore after today, but it's still higher. And then what about whether or not you kind of like him going forward here with the schedule shaping up to have at the White Sox next week. So that's an obvious yes. But what do you think about Singer's K's then? Let's focus on that.
Oh man, this is hard. I feel like every year there are a few players where we have these discussions in April and I go, this is it. This is the breakout. I've been waiting for it. It's about to happen. It's gonna, it's happening. It's happening before our very eyes. And then like, you know, in May, we're like, nah, you got to drop Didi Gregorius. You got to drop whatever, you know, whatever guy. Didi Gregorius is always the guy who just sticks out in my head. Jorge Mateo last year, right? Like, everything points to Brady Singer turning into the pitcher I thought he was going to be last year. And he's got a 16% swinging strike rate. More importantly than that, more importantly than how good he's looked, he has changed the pitch mix. And he has finally added that third pitch, at least so far. Now, that third pitch is just a four-seam fastball to go along with his sinker and his slider. But that is something that gives him another offering on those days where like he can go to something else if the sinker isn't working, if the slider isn't working. I'm very, very intrigued. And I like, if you were asking me right now, like, would I drop Hunter Brown for Brady Singer? I would.
I think I would too.
Not to mention, he gets a pitch in that Chicago, division.
That's the White Sox and the division. I thought you were just going to bring up the next start, but yeah.
Yeah, he gets
a pitch. I think I would too in a shallower league, okay? Because we are looking to make quicker moves. And like one of the flaws that we both talk about is that in shallow leagues, we are too patient.
Yep.
And I do still think you should be patient with a good portion of your roster right now with Brown because you cannot use him in the near future. I said I might use him for the Cubs start if he's good against Atlanta, but like he's not going to be good against Atlanta almost certainly. Yeah, I think I would make that move. I think
next start, he's got a two-step next week, White Sox and
are you sure that's a two-step? Aren't they running I think wouldn't so. Lugo be the one? Based on what I'm seeing on
the wire. Oh, no. I'm wrong. It's a White Sox on Tuesday, and then he'll have a two-step the following week, home versus the Blue Jays at the Tigers.
We're doing that all day for Singer. So we're using the next three starts for sure. We're tepid on the next starts for Brown. Brown looks like shit. Singer looks good. I would make that move if I have nobody else to cut. Again, I'm trying not to cut Brown. Let me be clear. And yes, that is a little bit fence city. I will eat that one. But I like Brown, so I'm trying not to cut him. But if you keep looking up and down your roster of potential cuts and nobody stands out because you want to keep this stash and you want to keep this breakout potential, who's off to a slow start, blah, 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 and you keep landing back on Brown, I'd pull the trigger. Singer at 73%, by the way, higher than Hauk. So not even as available, but where he is, take that opportunity. All right, next up, we have Michael Wacha, teammate. Michael Wacha got hit by that batted ball. He's all good. Plus 9 points up to 31% for him. This was part of the reason that you were so in on KC back then. A, you talked up their lineup, which credit there. But then when they went with
their offseason moves. Like
The Lugo Wacha combo
and,
was hot.
And, and adding to that bullpen. Like, they really, really strengthened that bullpen. I just
think they deepened it big time.
They made it a really, really complete team. And I just felt like they were one of the most complete teams in that division, and nobody was talking about them. JJ Bleday.
I agree.
JJ Bleday almost had a nice double, but Leody Taveras is so good in the outfield.
He's so damn. By the way, he gets so underrated on that Texas team because they're so deep, which I understand. Yeah. But you know, this show loves Leody, so we are very pro Leody. And we're pro JJ Bleday too, but
we are.
It's all right. So Waka, been a fan of his from the jump. Despite going to Texas A&M, he still won me over. The changeup from heaven, it's just such a great pitch. It has carried him throughout his career. Ups and downs for sure. But the last two seasons in Boston, San Diego have been excellent. Setting up for a nice one here in KC. Are we going to see a strikeout spike, or is he just going to be standard issue quality Waka?
I think it's standard issue quality Waka. Like, nothing's really changed in the profile. Maybe the strikeouts come up just a little bit because he's pitching in a division that's not used to seeing him. But like, that'll even out as teams get to see him a second, third time. So I would say that, like, this is just standard Waka. As long as he's healthy, he's a good pitcher, not a great pitcher, but just a great, you know, SP4-5 kind of guy, team streamer. And I think you're going to be able to stream him more often than you wouldn't.
So maybe that premium, what I'm talking about, where he's really only sitting, Waka is, against the top scale teams. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you pretty much just leave him in and you really enjoy it. Also having a swing or a called strike spike similar to Hauk. So probably some run hot. He gets the White Sox next and then probably sets up for at least one of those.
He's going to have the teams. Same two step as Singer.
We're using them all of the next three.
Yeah.
We love Waka here, and we will continue to do some. All right, next up, we jump to a guy that you put me on based on the one thing you told me about how he was handled last year and how much he hated it. I really think Sean Manaea is going to get back into his bag and be in this Waka-esque tier. I'm not projecting some major surge for Manaea, but you talked about how he hated the way he was utilized by your Giants. Kind of the in-between, never really knowing if he was going to be the 3-4 inning long man or you know, open for 3 or 4 innings or get a traditional start, and he just didn't vibe with it. And you know what? Everyone's kind of different. Some guys can kind of just go with the flow and do whatever you need them to do. Others really need those roles. We've heard that from bullpens, where they really want to know, I'm the 7th inning guy, I'm the 8th inning guy. You know, I think you got to be ready to go when you go. And you know, if the manager can put you in that position, then of course he should, right? Because you get the best out of your players when they know. But if it's a situation where, hey, we got these lefties and righties and we're going to play matchups in the bullpen, I think you should be ready when your number's called. But for a starter, go ahead.
I was just saying, and shout out to Eno Saris, because Eno.
Okay, that's where you heard that?
Yeah, like, you know, and I were having a conversation last season. We were at the ballpark, a bunch of us, like when Nick Pollock was in town in August, a bunch of us went to a Giants game, and we were just like sitting around. Eno was having a beer, and other people were having beers, and I was just listening. And Eno talked about, like, just Manaea just hated it. Like, because I made the comment, like, well, Manaea's not going to opt out. He goes, he could, just because he hates.
And he did.
Yeah, you know, he hates kind of the situation. And I think, too, part of what played into it was the fact that, like you said, like, some managers can get people to buy in. Apparently, all the players really hated Gabe Kapler. Like, they could not stand. And I think one of the reasons he ended up getting fired was the players just did not buy into him as a manager.
That's tough.
And so you get the combination of those two things, and I can totally understand why, like, Manaea, like said, I'll opt out of that $15 million, just go somewhere else, try to reset my market as a real starter.
Yeah,
and he's looked really, really good. And this is a huge bummer for me because I talked about this as like, hey, I think this is in the range of outcomes, and I didn't get him like anywhere.
Yeah, and he still got $14 million for 2 years, and he can opt out after this year if he pops off. So Manaea can reset his market. If he happens to have a spike here, he can go back into the market and get more money, or he can just take 14 more next year with the Mets. But I'm excited for him. He's a pitcher I've always liked. Now, is this going to be a breakthrough? I don't know. His swing and strike rate's only up a point to kind of facilitate this 9-point jump in strikeout rate. But I do like the comfort factor. I think he is a more trustable pitcher. And like I said, very much in this Waka tier. So that's kind of where I'm at with Manaea. What about you? Do you think there's a strikeout gain to be had?
I wouldn't be surprised if there is. I think I've always felt like I love Manaea's mechanics.
Yep.
I love the way he approaches hitters. For me, it's always been about health has been the issue. And who knows how long, if he can stay healthy through the entire year. But I think if he does, like, would I be surprised if he had like a 28% strikeout rate? I would not be surprised.
Not at all.
So, yeah, I'm totally buying this. This is one of those, like, you just kind of ride until the wheels fall off. Because his health is a problem. He's very much like Michael Walker. I think while he's healthy, I think Manaea is going to be a really good pitcher.
He's lefty Walker. Just ride with him. Mm-hmm. You sit him in the really tough spots. You know, he's going to get Atlanta on occasion because he's in that division. It's funny right now, and this is just like, I don't know what their rating system is at Fantasy Pros, but they're 31 and 32, Manaea and Walker. They're right by each other, and they're 38 and 40% rostered at ESPN and Yahoo.
Here's the question, though. He gets the Royals next. Shit. Would you start him home versus the Royals on Saturday?
I would, but then not at the Dodgers next week.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think, again, I am duly afraid of this KC team, but they have not quite earned top of the scale fear teams yet. City Field is still a pitcher's park. We do not have that one wrong unless they change it. You know what? I'm going to check it now that I'm so wrong on the KC thing. Let me just check. Okay, no. City Field, 27th in park factor at 96 points. So 4% below league average. So yes, I would in 15s and some 12s, not in 10s.
Yeah, and it's hard too because his start after the Dodgers are the Cardinals, who it's lefties pretty well. So kind of a rough schedule. I don't know that I would start. I think I would probably start him against the Royals and then kind of see how he does against the Dodgers before making a decision on the Cardinals.
Yep. I love that take. All right. So we like Sean Manaea. We are definitely in there. Let's move on to our next guy here. Oh, a guy we have also liked. And now, at least so far, with this 7-point jump up to 26% K rate, I can actually point to something. When people say, why do you like Dane Dunning? I can say, well, he's missing some bats now. In the past, it's been like vibes. I don't know. He just gets outs. Now, he's had a weird start. It's two starts, so who gives a shit? But 13 innings, 26% K rate with a 14% swinging strike rate. However, 13% walk rate and 2.1 hits per nine. Homers per nine. Homers per nine on Dunning there. So he's had good and bad. He had the new pitch. It's working. The 4.15 ERA and 1.08 whip says the homers aren't killing him. We can't have that many homers, though. We know that. Where do we stand on Dane Dunning as a new strikeout guy with a 4-point jump in swinging strike rate? Do we buy it?
Not quite yet. I do love seeing the swing strike rate up. I think he's getting fairly lucky. One of the things, you know, I kind of just looked at real quick was like, okay, like where is he getting these like outs? Where is he getting these, you know, strikeouts? And it's when he gets ahead in the count, when he's attacking early. The problem is he's not attacking early. He's like only throwing a first pitch strike like 52% of the time. Like he's not attacking hitters early. So like I don't quite understand. Like where, you know, part of it is he's just getting super lucky on the BABIP. It's a 148 BABIP right now.
That's canceling out the potential home run pain for Dunning, right?
Yeah, like I think he's getting pretty lucky. I do want to keep monitoring this because there is a pitch mix change. Like he is throwing that slider more, and he did introduce the new pitch. But he's still giving up like above average, you know, zone contact, and which is kind of what he's always done, right? He gives up a lot of contact because he gets weak outs. So it may be two or three starts from now, I might feel a little bit more confident, like, hey, there is something that's changing. I think you pick him up and kind of roll with him because,
yes,
he's going to go deep enough in a game to qualify for wins, and the Rangers are going to win him games.
Yep.
But I'm not ready to anoint him to like a new tier of starting pitcher.
Fully agree on all that with Dane Dunning. Don't need to reiterate it. Gets a trip to Houston this weekend. I'm not necessarily going for that. Maybe in a 15 teamer, I could. And then
at Detroit next week. Houston's hitting, like, I don't think you need to run from them right now, though.
You don't have to run from them. Yeah, they're still a quality team. They can put up runs on anybody. But if you believe in Dane Dunning, I don't hate it. It's probably for deeper leagues, though. A 10, you just probably don't have to take that kind of risk. But if you want to pick him up and stash, he goes to Detroit next weekend, and I definitely want that.
Yeah.
I definitely want that. So we like Dane Dunning a good bit. Okay, let's get into some negatives. We got a few more minutes here. A few guys that I just want to test you and see if you're worried about. In fact, we're going to go back to KC in a moment, but let's start with the one that I think people are showing some real concern on because he's coming off his second out of the last 3 years being a little bit of a dud. And now the skills are off on Aaron Nola this year. And it's still super early. And I'm inclined to say sit tight and keep starting him and everything. But it is a big dip, Justin. It's minus 11 points down to a 14% K rate for Aaron Nola. The swinging strike rate's down 5 ticks to 7%. We have not seen that. The walk rate's up to 12%. The velo's down 2 points. It's 3 starts, not 2, by the way. Not that that makes a huge difference, but I did say 2. Is Aaron Nola in some trouble? Is he hurt?
I think he's hurt. I mean, this is all the makings of his hurt. He's like, his velo's down. He's unable to get stuff out of the zone. He's relying more and more on the fastball, which is now like 55 or 54%. Of the pitches that he's throwing is on the fastball. So he's like, he's either afraid or he's being hurt by the secondary thing.
That's a 7-point jump. And yeah, curveball could definitely hurt.
Yeah.
Hurt more to throw.
This scares the crap out of me.
I completely agree.
I mean, I'm not saying you drop him, but like if someone was offering me 90 cents on the dollar right now, I might take it.
Yeah, I think I could get behind a buy low, like or a sell low. If somebody comes in trying to get a discount, I might give them that opportunity. You know, usually I'm the one that's rooting around trying to get these, but in this case, I think I'm like, you know what, you want to buy low, by all means, here you go.
Like if someone came to you and offered, this one would be easy for you, Dylan Cease.
Oh, yeah. Slam dunk that one. I love Dylan Cease. He looks good so far as well.
What about, here's an interesting one. Guy who was going above or right around Aaron Nola last year, Christian Javier.
Ooh, now that's an interesting one. I think I would go for that with Javier. Really interesting one. You're not bought in on Javier's changeup?
He's still walking 5 batters per night.
That's fair. It's been a little wild for sure. Swinging strike rate's down for him too. Yeah, maybe not everything's all roses for him. I might try to get a throw in there. I say, hey, I see what you're doing here. You might need to give me a little hitting upgrade too. Maybe not 2-for-1, but I get a hitting upgrade there.
Yeah.
To do that.
What about like Nathan Eovaldi? I don't think I would, but
I wouldn't do that one.
I'm just looking at the war leaders for starting pitchers right now.
Now, here's something. Colorado and White Sox next week, both at home. I think you got to start Nola, right?
Yeah, you have to. If he gets shellacked.
Yeah, if these go poorly, then we're in some deep trouble. First off, then it's an automatic sit for the following week. And then we might hear some news, even if it's just phantom. Or not phantom, but like they may like overstate something like, oh, he's really got to go on the IL for this. All right. A few more names I want to get to, and you got to get out of here in 9 minutes. So we go back to KC on a negative, unfortunately, because everything else has been so positive over there. But Seth Lugo's strikeout rate is down 11 points to 12%. So he's darn near cut it in half. Now, it hasn't affected the results, so it's only semi-negative, let's say, because he still has a 1.45 ERA and a 1.18 whip with 2 wins in his 3 starts. So we're still positive on a lot of things. But the velo's down almost a mile and a half at 1.4, and that's right around the area where you start to take stock of it. Swing strike rate's down just over a point, and then this big K rate dip. Now, he's always been able to maintain a quality K rate despite not huge swing strike rates. At 25 and 23% the last 2 years, despite a flat 9% swinging strike rate. So I'm not as worried about the swinging strike rate dip. And again, the results have been good, but what do we think with regards to the strikeout dip for Lugo? Is this just some flukiness, and since he's doing well, we're not worried? Or do you have some concerns here that you might try to sell high on?
I think more needs to be revealed on this one. Fair. I think that if the velocity doesn't start ticking back up, I might start getting a little worried because he throws the fastball so much. Like, he's a 50%
rare breed guy.
And yep. So like, if he, I think that mile and a half could come back to haunt him if he's going to continue to throw that fastball so much. And he always has thrown that fastball so much. So to me, I'm not like panicking, especially because the results are so good, but this is definitely one where I'm like, okay, keeping an eye on. I'm not necessarily starting him everywhere, but I'm not dropping him. I'm not looking to like move him or something like that. But if he's on the wire, I'm not going to pick him up either, really.
Yeah, and he shouldn't be right now with this ERA. Like with this success, usually kind of keeps guys picked up. But yeah, like he's in that Waka Manaea tier. So I'm starting him against a lot of teams right now, and we'll just keep tabs on it. One thing you got to be careful of, right? We talk about not overreacting to the negative stats. Don't underreact to positive stats, surface level ones, like the ERA being so tiny, when there's some underlying things to at least monitor with Lugo. So again, we're starting him. He gets that favorable schedule, or at least a piece of it. Let's see what he's going to get. He gets... he gets the two-step next week. So at the White Sox and home to Baltimore. We don't love the Baltimore piece, but you got to take the White Sox. You got to take the two-step there with Lugo.
I think so.
And then we'll reassess after that. All right, Pablo Lopez is down 10 points to 19%. I can't imagine you're too concerned here, but I am curious just to see.
No, I'm not concerned at all on Pablo Lopez.
Me neither.
I think part of this is like just early season stuff. And
I think it's goofiness because his swing and strike rate's actually dead even to last year's 15%, which was a career high.
And they've had a bunch of games postponed and stuff. So, like, he's just, I think, out of rhythm, cold weather. Yeah. Like, that's, I'm not worried about Pablo.
243 BABIP is carrying him. The results are still good. 0% concern here.
Yeah.
Frankly, I would buy high. Like, if somebody was trying to sell because they thought maybe the strikeout rate was a problem, which I doubt anybody is, but I would buy at fair market value. Like, I got to have no problem paying whatever premium is out there on him.
This is why my main event team has such great ratios and no strikeouts.
Yeah. There you go. And you're going to start getting his Ks because they're going to come through. Now, this next guy you talked about starting him, I think he's on this same main event team. So he's another reason why your ERA is going well with a good whip, because he has a 350 ERA and a 106 whip. A couple bad innings. In fact, I think it was the first inning of the first two starts for Nestor Cortez were a little bumpy, but things have been pretty good overall because those are great ratios. However, it is a pretty substantial 7-point dip down to an 18% strikeout rate. Same swinging strike rate, or essentially 10.4, 10.2. We don't care about those 0.2. And then the walk rate's down 2 points from 8 to 6, which we do like. So a lot of things going the right way except the strikeout piece. Are you concerned about that with Nestor? Or can he succeed with a high teens, low 20s strikeout rate?
This one's hard because like I want to say like he's going to be fine. but like he's looked so weird in each one of these starts, except for the last one. Last one was fine. Like
that one was good throughout against Arizona, right?
No, not versus Arizona.
At Houston one, excuse me. You're talking about
Miami.
Miami one. I'm going the wrong way on the chart there.
But like if you look at the game log and you look at the plate discipline, he had 13 and 14% swing and strike rate in his first and his last start, or most recent start.
Okay.
It's just his one start at Arizona, he had a sub 4% swing and strike rate, 3.4% swing and strike rate, which is dragging down those numbers.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be okay. But I also don't want to like the problem with a guy like Mr. Cortez is because he messes with his mechanics so much to fool with hitters. Like I think sometimes he's just going to be uneven. Sometimes you're going to have like those crappy first innings like he did in the first two starts, and then he's fine the rest of the outing. And sometimes that's going to carry on to a full start. Sometimes it's not. And
He's Johnny Cueto-esque.
He is. And Johnny Cueto had amazing games and then would go out and throw an absolute dud.
Yep.
So, like, I think he's going to be fine. At the same time, like, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
He's
like,
in the Wakamanaya Lugo tier, though, right? Where we start him pretty much against everyone but the toughest team. So, at Cleveland this weekend.
I didn't start him the first two starts. Against Houston and against Arizona. I started him this last one against Miami. Like, I think that's
no wonder you're doing so well. You avoided the 6.30 ERA, then you get the 8 scoreless. No wonder. Yep. My goodness. Yeah, I think at Cleveland this weekend, home to Tampa Bay next weekend, I'm starting both those.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, he's a guy you always keep tabs on, though. You check in, make sure things are going, you check in. But right now, nothing really has me overly concerned on Nestor Cortez. So there you go, a handful of guys up and down. Strikeout rate starts to stabilize around 70 batters faced, which means you can start to take it a bit more seriously. It does not guarantee anything, but it starts to have a little bit of meaning to it where you're like, oh, okay, maybe we are in the midst of a breakout, or maybe we do have some concern for trouble. So just keep that in mind there. And, you know, it's always difficult to kind of come up with topics. So I thought this was an interesting one to at least take a temperature on some pitchers that are on both ends of the spectrum there. So, Justin, good luck. Continued good luck there with your insane pitching staff. Y'all, I should tell you, behind the scenes, this MF-er is testing the baseball gods so badly. Because I was like, oh, you know, you can't really be sitting Hunter Brown in deep leagues. You got to have real pitching depth. It's like, maybe you can't. I certainly can. My ERA starts with a 0, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you are just asking for it. And so I'm just saying, if it happens to him, then he asked for it.
Yeah, but yeah.
You know, Justin and his victory laps. He can't get enough of them.
I got to enjoy it while I can. I mean, I do have, like, teams with bad pitching, right? Like,
yeah, I know. But that pitching is so sparkling right now. One of my auction
leagues, I've got, like, a 4.04 ERA and a 1.30 whip.
Okay, wait a minute. That can't be your bad example. If 4.04 is not that bad.
That is my bad example.
There's people listening right now that have probably, like, a 7, and they're like, what the hell's this MF for complaining about a 4.04?
I'm sure. Let me go look at that that team where I have to like start Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, or what about the one? Any of the ones where you have Ober
5.12.
There you go.
ERA and a 1.51. Like that team's already buried.
Did you start Ober this week?
I didn't start Ober this week.
Fucking coward.
At least not in Tout Wars. I didn't. But I started Brady Singer in that league. So. That'll work out okay.
How do you skip a two-step with a guy you think has Cy Young capability? I don't give a shit. It's Detroit on the weekend.
I'm sorry.
If he's as good as you say he is, unbelievable.
I should have. No, I should have. I absolutely should have. I, you know, and I beat myself up in the Discord when we were talking about it. I was like, yeah, I didn't start it over this weekend and I'm beating myself up. But yeah, no, my pitching is not a problem right now. Now it's still really, really early.
Of course.
You know, one Hunter Brown-esque outing.
Yeah, or an Obering, right? Like the one, his first start of the year.
Yeah.
No, so
my league is like Zach Eflin not doing as great as my league's without Zach Eflin.
I almost included him, by the way. He just missed the cut here. As we're headed out then. Okay, I was going to ask. Any concerns there? None for me. I'm sticking with him through and through right now for Zach Eflin. And just to put a bow on it, his upcoming schedule is San Francisco this weekend and a trip to New York against the Yankees. And I will start that one. Even if the San Francisco one doesn't go well, I'm riding Zach Eflin. He gets, you know, 7-8 starts for me before I really make a move one way or the other.
I mean, if the San Francisco one doesn't go well, then maybe I have some concerns because San Francisco's offense sucks.
It does. I mean, it would depend how bad it is. If he gets Hunter Brown, we reassess.
Yeah.
If it's 5 innings, 4 runs, which I don't love, but it's like 5 strikeouts with it, and it was like one bad inning or some shit, then I don't care, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I will let you go. We'll be back tomorrow talking some two-step guys and any sort of news that happens here on the rest of today's short slate. So good talking with you. Talk to you tomorrow morning.
Take it easy.